It's now time to hit the rewind button as we join those cheeky chaps over at the Retro Asylum.
Hello lads, it's Stu here. Unfortunately, won't be able to do show. Really busy, unfortunately, with band. Last Arcade's really busy at the moment. So, it looked like it was going to be an amazing game. So, sorry to all you people there who wanted me to be on the show, and sorry to Don. But, you know, I hope the show goes great because it looks like a good game. So, yeah, sorry about that. All the best. See you now.
Hello and welcome to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, episode 255. My name's Dean Swain, and with me is Mr. Christopher Worthington. And where's Mads?
Oh, he said, did you not get his message?
No.
Oh, he was supposed to be with us, but I think his dog needed an extra long walk or something like that.
Really? Yeah. Really? That sounds like a very plausible story.
Well, you know, Mads, any excuse, isn't it, to get out of it? Anyway, enough of Mads. We've just heard there in the intro from Stu, and obviously you're Dom in this episode.
Yes, yes. Stu, my partner in crime.
He's a rock star.
He's a pop star, isn't he? Synthwave. Mad, and he's going to be appearing on Top of the Pops. Not that Top of the Pops is on anymore, but
he's doing well.
He's doing very well. I'm very pleased for him. It's a good song.
Do you like the song?
Yeah, I do like it.
Can't say anything but that now, can you?
Well, exactly, I can't. But no,
it's rubbish.
It's crap. No. Steve, I'm joking. Very catchy, and it's doing really well. The feedback has been phenomenal. So yeah, good luck to him, Steve. When you're rich and famous, don't forget us.
But he was too busy to play Mayhem in Monsterland.
He was, yeah.
Never mind. We played it.
We did. He switched it on once just to test his Kung Fu cart.
That was in May, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
See, that's what Steve does, you see. Whenever he joins in, he plays loads of it before the months even start. And I always say to him, Steve, you're gonna burn out, you'll get bored. Lo and behold, by the first of the month, yeah, I'm bored of that now.
Yeah. Well, me and Steve have got a very special episode planned, and a lot has gone into it already. But we haven't talked about it now for a couple of months. You know, we've put so much planning, there's a big document, there's all these ideas, but since he's become a pop star, then, you know, it's out the window. Whether it will happen or not, it's another thing.
I was actually looking back today. You know, we have little view, the viewers, the listeners can get a little glimpse behind the scenes here, because on our Telegram chat, we have separate chat rooms for each of our episodes, so as not to confuse it with the general chat, because we have so much crap goes on in that general chat that any meaningful stuff just gets lost really quickly.
It does.
And I was looking back at some of our old episode ideas, you know, and so the amount of chats that we've started up on an episode idea, and then
it doesn't go anywhere. I know.
I was looking back on them all today thinking, oh, that actually sounded like a good episode idea, and it just never, certain things just don't get the
track. It's a shame, but, you know, sometimes we do go back to these ideas,
Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to an episode today from 2015, which was, do you remember the Amiga episode that Sam, Matt and Steve did?
Yes.
Years ago. That was over 6 years ago.
I know. It's scary how time flies. You know, I do a lot of the covers. I'm the only one that does the covers now. But over time, you know, I've got basically hard drives full of the episodes and full of the covers. And I look back and you look at the date and you just think, wow.
Yeah, was it really that long ago?
Where's that time gone?
But the point I was going to make was that if anybody thinks, oh, you know, Retro Asylum are a bit slow at the moment, look, that happens. You know, we're all busy. We all have especially lives. It goes in waves.
During the summer as well, we normally have, yeah, because we try and get, we don't push these out all the time.
No.
It's usually once a month, or you'll get them every 2 weeks, or occasionally you'll get two podcasts in the same week. It just depends. Yeah. On air is flowing, but I've noticed during the summer, around this time, we do tend to take a bit of a break.
Yeah,
it's not planned. It's just, you know, life gets
there's
in the way.
Going on, and holidays.
Yeah,
and
that's
whatnot.
It.
Yeah.
And people do get a bit burnt out at times as well. So, not that we are burnt out.
If anyone's new to the show, go back and listen to some of those older episodes, because I tell you what, that Amiga episode is some of the best Amiga chat I've heard on any podcast. And if it wasn't for the fact they were mentioning the Amiga's 30th birthday, which it was in 2015.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it was.
No,
you can listen.
Recorded yesterday.
That's the great thing about the retro scene. You can miss out on so much stuff. It's nice to go back through the back catalogue.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might pick up on something that you've totally missed and learn something, or find out about a game that had been released around that time.
Yeah, so, completely timeless.
Yeah.
So there you go, guys. If you're ever thinking, oh, I haven't heard the Retro Asylum episode for a while, and you haven't listened to some of the older episodes, don't think that just because they're old, they're not relevant. They absolutely are, and they're really good stuff.
And while we're on the subject, I would like to personally just thank you and Mads, because you do keep the ball rolling. I'm not on as often as I'd like. Yeah, like I said, me and Steve have got an episode planned, but because of what's happening with Steve, he's been put back a bit. And myself, I get a bit lazy at times, but used to have been on it. So thank you.
Well, you say that, mate, but you do all the work behind the scenes. You do all the stuff organising, all the hosting, the covers. You know, you always get me and Mads sending you messages saying, Dean, we've just recorded this episode. We want it to go out tomorrow. Crack on with the cover.
Yeah, that last one was a bit short notice, but I still enjoy doing them. You know, just something I like doing. In fact, last night I was starting work on the cover for this episode, and it's taking longer than I want, because normally I can knock covers out in an hour or two. Sometimes, you know, it depends on if you can find the right artwork, or sometimes we have stuff drawn up for us especially.
Yeah.
But I want to use a CRT kind of look for this cover.
Nice.
So it's a bit time-consuming, but it should look pretty nice once it's finished.
Yeah, but you never need to thank us, mate. I appreciate the sentiment, and it's nice of you to say that. But we Mads and I do it, and I can only speak for Mads. I can hear a faint voice coming from somewhere.
Really?
That we do it because we enjoy it, and that's why. And you know that, and you know if there's bound to come a time at some point when we might need to say, you know what, we need to just step back from it for a few weeks. Yeah. And
well, most people do. We've got such a turnover of, or we have done anyway in the past. You know, we have got through a few team members. People,
but it's
10
years,
away,
mate.
But
I mean, it's not.
Oh, of course. And I think that the show, you know, if you'd had the same host, as nice as that could have been,
it probably
would have got stale by
for
now.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, people, you do at some point, you know, especially for those hosts who really, for them, it's about the nostalgia. It's about talking about what they enjoyed when they were kids.
And we're not really like, you know, a lot of the other shows, they interview people regularly. Yeah. With us, it's more about our experiences and memories
and how
of
it
the games.
Feels.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, we're cracking on, you know, and
yes,
there'll always
we are.
Be.
We are.
You know, we're coming up to an exciting time in the Game Club. We've got Listener's Choice next month. Got your favourite 2 months of the year in August and September with the RPG. I know that's the one you particularly
I'm looking forward to it.
But tell me what you've been up to anyway, because you've been messing around with some exciting stuff recently.
I have, yes. Before I forget, though, I do just want to mention Black Lighter. They have sent me some great overlays for the Vectrex. These UV overlays. You saw one of them, didn't you? I sent you a
incredible
picture.
Incredible, yeah.
They look so good. So if you've got a Vectrex, just look up Black Lighter Ultraviolet Overlays on Google. They'll come up. Buy some. Do yourself a favour. They're amazing. But yes,
it's completely transformational, that on the Vectrex, isn't it? You know, it turns it into something incredible.
Especially in a dark room.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm lucky in the shed, obviously, during any time, I can turn the lights off and it looks amazing. It really does. But yes, I picked up a Mister FPGA system.
Good.
And I'm very impressed with it. Regular listeners will know how much I love my real hardware, although when I very first started the show, I did say I used emulation a lot.
I wasn't going to say.
I did. I admit it. Go back to episode whatever it was.
One.
Episode one, yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, as an experiment, I have put away a lot of my collection. So the Amiga, the Atari ST, the Atari 8-bit computer, the Amstrad 6128, and the Commodore C64 have all been put away for the time being. Yeah, don't worry, I'm not selling them or anything. But I've been using the Mister, which replaces all those systems pretty faithfully. And I'm not really missing them, apart from the physical look, you know?
Yeah, the nostalgia.
Yeah. The one thing, obviously, the Mister can't do is actually transform its physical appearance into these machines while you're using
them. That's version two, isn't it?
That's version two. That would be lovely. But yeah, very, very impressive, I've got to say.
Yeah. So what have you spent most of your time on the Amiga stuff?
Probably when it comes to the computer side of things and the C64.
Yeah.
It does the Spectrum Next, which I was quite surprised at how well it does it.
Faithfully, does it?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Because interesting.
You've got to remember, the Spectrum Next is FPGA itself.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So it's more or less a carbon copy, but you don't get that unique case, which looks so sexy. And
it does.
What have you.
It does.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only thing with it is finding, like, using one screen with it, because you can do HDMI and that will work with every system on there. It will display them all. But I hate the look of retro games on an LCD screen.
So does it automatically put them in 4:3, or do you have to configure that?
You configure that. It's not hard to do. It's just a couple of options. You can have scan lines on an LCD if you wish. But obviously, they're never going to look right compared to a CRT. Now, I've got a Sony Trinitron and I've got a Philips CRT up on his side for the vertical games. Because I've got an arcade machine, but playing the games actually on a vertical screen the right way they should be played, you know, Pac-Man and Commando and Arkanoid, all those classics, it feels so good.
Yeah,
it's, I bet you. And looks amazing. And I've also got a CRT monitor here for the PC stuff.
Yeah.
Because there is the AO486 core.
Yeah. So you're running some Doom, weren't you?
Yeah, I was running that on my Trinitron, first of all. You have to mess about with the Mister to do so.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work with all the games. And they look nice on a CRT, but obviously some of the text is not legible, you know. It's hard to read.
Yeah.
So
where did you get that monitor from then? Is that new? Did you get that with the Mister, or have you had that for a while?
No. I picked that up. When did I get it? Probably a week after I got the Mister.
Oh, did you?
It's £30 on Facebook or Gumtree, something like that. Yeah, you can still, you know, there's CRTs. I've been looking on Facebook and there's still people giving away CRTs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just monitors, not Sony Trinitrons, but fairly decent CRTs. Yeah. As long as it does a 60 hertz picture and it's got a SCART connector on the back, you're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I must say, my panic. Remember, I was talking when we first got those Kung Fu flashes?
Yeah.
I was talking about the. I was having issues with the sound on a couple of the games that we were trying, wasn't I? And you suggested cleaning out the cartridge port, which it did. And I thought it had fixed it, but it started happening again.
Right.
So just as a bit of an experiment, I got my Famicom out and was messing around with that. The same thing happened.
Ah.
So it's the TV. So every now, after about 2 minutes, the sound goes off and you have to switch the TV off and back on again.
Right.
So it's on its way.
It's on its way. What kind of CRT is that?
It's a Panasonic. It's a beauty. I really love it. I've had it.
Not a 21 inch by any chance.
No,
it?
It's bigger than that. I think it's 24.
Right.
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, 24. Yeah, it's a shame. But yeah, this is the thing. They're going to go, aren't they?
They are. But that guy, Gunblade.
Yeah. Yes.
He might be able to help you. I mean, he's more of a picture monitor guy, but I'm sure he can do. It's got to be something like, you know, a cap or something.
Well, you would have thought so, because everything else about it is perfect. And it comes straight back on. You just switch it off and switch it back on again. And then actually, once it's warmed up a little bit, it stops happening. And it might happen once every half an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like a cap, doesn't it?
Don't go throwing it.
No, wait.
Get it looked at. If you're happy with the picture. Yeah. And, you know, I hear so many people, they think, oh, well, I can't fix it. I'll throw it.
Yeah, I've been it.
That's another CRT gone.
Exactly. Yeah. Joe was at the dump on Sunday. This is really boring for the listeners. So that's at the dump. Throwing some stuff away. But you know, they have the container, don't they, for the TVs and monitors.
Yeah.
I just kind of popped my head round and just had a little look in. And there must have been about 15 CRTs in there. How many of them do you reckon are absolutely fine or might just need a recapping or...
Probably all of them are fine.
So sad.
Yeah, yeah. I've got, because where I work, we've got a warehouse and one of my CRTs, the SCART connector needs reconnecting, basically. It needs soldering.
They go loose, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... I can't find my soldering iron anywhere, so I need to buy one. But I've left it at the warehouse because it's just they've got space and I haven't. It's a 21 inch. It's quite big.
Yeah.
And they're clearing out a corner of the warehouse where my CRT was, and they nearly skipped it. I've done my nut.
No, you can't do this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they need to be salvaged. I tell you, if I had more space, I'd just go and hoover them up. I'd go down the dump and say, I'll just take them all.
Chris can see the shed at the moment.
It's a beauty.
And that's not even being used at the moment, that Sony Trinitron there. I've got to move that out of the way so I can push these screens back. So I might have a CRT going spare soon.
I'd rather
someone use it than get thrown out. Yeah, I'm not that type of person. I look like a hoarder. The state of it in here is ridiculous.
Yeah, but we're not hoarders, though. I have this conversation with my wife all the time. We're not hoarders. No, because I wouldn't collect any old crap.
Surrounded by
loads of 1980s plastic.
But, yeah, for retro gaming, you're never, ever going to beat a CRT screen. I don't care what you say.
No. But the misters of the future, mate, you know, when all of this hardware dies, and it will, of course it will, we know.
Yeah.
It's the future by the sounds of it, isn't it? Yes, definitely.
I mean, some of the, you know, obviously the accuracy depends on the person who's written the core.
Yeah, but they're only going to get better, though.
Yeah, they will. They'll get better with time. Even if they release a core and it's got a few problems, it'll get fixed. And, you know, these guys, they're probing the original arcade boards and...
Yeah.
The proper systems, you know, they're getting all the information.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I got to say, out of everything I've played, 99% of it has been accurate. It's, amazing. Mm-hmm. It really is good. And for me, it saves a bit of space. Plus, I can now capture the footage from all these systems, which for us, you know, the plan is to start doing a few more YouTube videos, time permitting and all that. But it's good.
Only one on the team that's got one.
Yeah, well, they're expensive. They've actually gone up in price because of this chip shortage. I paid $330 for mine. I've also bought a hard drive, you know, the CRT monitor.
Yeah.
A couple of joypads for it, you know. Yeah. So it's probably cost me more towards $400, really, which is it's expensive, but I think for me it's worth it.
Time for a deep breath.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't tell the wife. The thing. Yeah. She doesn't listen, does she?
No, but one of the mums around the school is in, actually she runs the computers, the IT shop in the village.
Oh, right.
And they listen to the show in the shop.
Don't tell Mrs. Swain what Dean's paying for this stuff. She doesn't and that's know.
Because I've got a box for you, haven't I? Seeing you on Saturday, so
what a pickup that was.
Yeah, that was nice. That was nice. A £20 donation, and I've got a big box full of PC games. We've got Doom and...
Not just any PC games. Big box PC games.
Yeah.
Man, that's amazing. Quake, Doom, Syndicate. There's loads of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Oh, my eyes nearly popped out my head when you put that in
my chat. Yeah, it's just the right place, right time. You know, I just popped in there on the off chance I'd go and see the lady about something else. And she said, oh, by the way, someone who died. Yeah,
it normally is, unfortunately.
And £20 money to charity and it was secured. You
that
know,
must have so. Brought back your hunter-gatherer days of combing the booth fairs with Ali and Mikey and...
Yeah, that popped up recently, didn't it, on Facebook.
Seeing that,
yeah.
A very fresh-faced Dean Swain.
Yes, yeah, it was nearly 10 years ago, that picture, I think. Eight years?
So I've been getting myself excited with stuff as well. So I've a couple of big things in the last few weeks for me. I managed to snag a Neo Geo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Which came up on one of the Facebook groups I'm on. I managed to grab that for at a price which is way below what you'd normally see that for on eBay. So I was well pleased with that. Box is in great condition, Japanese. I feel like I've fulfilled a lifelong dream by owning a Neo Geo. Now I've got one big problem.
Go on.
I haven't got any games.
Oh, they're not going to be cheap either, are they?
Well, I think what I've probably resolved to do is at some point, and I don't know when, is invest in this this SD solution from Terror Onion, who does the mode, and
they charge a fortune.
It's Chris, a lot of money.
I don't want to rub it in, but the Mister plays that stuff.
Well, of course it does.
Perfectly.
I can emulate it, you know.
It's not the same.
You know, so I've got this beauty of, and it's in great nick, this beauty of a console with an authentic arcade stick, an official Neo Geo arcade stick.
Yep.
And, you know, I even bought myself a step down converter because I wanted to plug it in, but I literally...
Don't blow it up though, will you?
No, so all that was fine, but there's no kind of title screen on the Neo Geo. So if you plug it in with no cartridge in it, you just get a blue screen. So I literally have nothing.
You sure it works?
Well, I actually YouTubed somebody starting it up without a card in. And mine does exactly what theirs does.
So it doesn't do that bit where the Neo Geo logo swivels round.
No, not without a card in. Not unless there's something wrong with mine, which of course there may be because I have no way of testing it.
Mm.
So
if any listeners want to donate a game to Chris to test,
I'll give it back.
Honest. Don't trust him. No, but he will.
There must be a King of Fighters game knocking around for next to nothing.
I would have thought so.
Anything.
We don't ask for donations. A lot of YouTubers, they get donations, don't they?
Yeah,
I feel guilty.
Yeah, I know. Like, they're all getting sent stuff. Like, Neil from Retro Man Cave, he does whole episodes devoted to opening his gifts.
I know. Sickening. Wrong, sickening. Oi, listen, you lot, we've been entertaining you for bleeding nearly 10 years now. Send us something in return.
Oh, I feel like I've done all right, actually, so I'm not saying anything.
Talking of all right, what else have you got this week?
So I don't think the listeners know this. Maybe I might have mentioned that. I can't remember. Well, if they do, bear with me. Indulge me. Because I've got a big birthday in about 5 weeks. And
how big's big?
I'm 30. No, I'm 40.
40. You youngster.
The Retro Asylum baby's growing up at long last. I'm joining you old fogies in the 40 club. And so my wife said, look, you know what? Yeah, I'm lucky. I've got a lot of the stuff I want. There's not a huge amount that, yeah, Vectrex would be nice. That was kind of on the list as well. And a possibility.
One of those.
Yeah, one of those you get. Yeah, exactly. Get the old green-eyed monster coming out. So the Vectrex was, you know, it was a possibility, but they are still quite hard to find. And
It's weird. They're not hard to find. It's just everyone's charging a fortune for them. You go on eBay, there's a number. Well, they're going to, unfortunately.
At some point, though, they've got to stop going up, you would have thought.
Who knows? Who knows?
You know, for yours?
50 quid.
50 quid, it makes me sick.
And that's the second one I paid. I bought one for 45 and I ended up selling that because it started playing up. Although I had it fixed, I got rid of it. I didn't sell it for much more than what I paid for it because I'm silly like that.
Quid.
Yeah.
I was listening to your Vectrex episode on Kane and Rinse and McKeel Croder, who was of this parish a couple of weeks ago as well. He was saying that one of his work colleagues just gave him one.
I know. And a Vectrex.
Very good.
Yes.
He's on form. Listeners, he's had three sips of beer and he's coming out with all the funnies now.
Well, England won the football tonight, so I'm in a good mood.
That's it. It's coming home, apparently.
Yeah. So they keep saying.
I wish most of them were going home. Anyway, so I said to my missus, well, look, what I'd always really wanted, a Sephora Neo Geo, is an arcade. I'd love my own arcade cab.
And a Vectrex.
And a Vectrex. Well, the Vectrex will have to wait till I'm 50.
Don't push your luck, though.
The Vectrex, I think, will have to wait. So she said, well, look, if you can, she said, I can't begin to know where to look, but if you can find one, you know, I'll pay for it. So started off a few months ago, started casting my eyes around, absolutely decided straight away I didn't want one of these modern ones with an LCD screen. I'd rather not have one than have one of those. Yep. I mean, I know for some it works and great, and they're very simple and, yeah, they're very easy to maintain, but I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to go and do it. I want one with a CRT. I want a traditional cab. I'm not bothered about it having, you know, the original PCBs. I can get over that with a...
Well, you know, these cabs, like the one that you've got, it's a traditional chip shop cab, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, in the UK, we had these cabs. They were Jammer.
Yeah.
They had different arcade boards going inside those every few weeks or so, depending on the popularity of the game.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's not going to win any awards for beauty at the moment. It's very generic. It's a black kind of black cab.
But look at the state of the one that I bought.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it had the front of where the cash dropped in. That had been kicked in.
Yeah.
Been all smashed. It was a mess.
And slowly but surely you just...
I was lucky. It was during the summer. So I actually had the cab in here just while I was restoring it. You know, I'd take it outside, do the work on it, wheel it back in.
Yeah.
And then once I got it ready, it went down to the kitchen.
Yeah. So that's exactly
what
I'm
going to do. My wife's delight.
Yeah, much. Yeah, you should have seen my wife's face. So I've given a fair warning on this. We got like a little playroom here, and I said, look, you know, go in. That's where like the PlayStation is and stuff like
that.
And I said, look, you know, we'll make a nice little corner for it there, and it's like next to my lad's dartboards. All good. I said, perfect. So I said, look, these are, you know, typical arcade machines, this size. And we measured them. She was like, oh, that's not too bad. The guy, just today, turned up and delivered it. And he was wheeling it in, you know, on his hydraulic truck and her face. She said, it's very big, isn't it? I was like, I gave you fair warning. And actually, the guy who delivered it said the amount of times he's delivered these things to people's houses and has had to take it because the ladies of the house have turned around and said, no way.
So many of them you see up for sale are because the wife has gone, no, not happening. That's where I count myself very lucky. Also, my machine, it's not as big as the one you've got. So I've played on your machine.
Yeah.
It's a little bit smaller, but not too, yeah, it's not much smaller, but it is slightly smaller.
Yeah.
I think if I had bought one the same size as yours, I don't think my wife would have stood for it. And it would have had to have gone in here, which now I could probably get a machine in here. But I don't really want to do that.
No. I'm well pleased with it. I need to figure out how to turn the volume down because it's very loud. Very loud. And my 19-in-1 PCB that's in there at the moment, which I am going to replace probably with some kind of groovy main PC setup, is stuck on Ghosts and Goblins, which isn't my favourite game. And it's got...
It's a hard game. I love the game, but it's bloody hard.
Well, it's got Defender and Gradius, and it's even got Mario Bros, which would be great for a two-player game with the kids while I'm waiting for my PC. So I need to figure out how to change the game. I need to play around with it. But I'm well pleased with it. And again, you know, in talking about... I said to my wife when it was delivered that we were looking at it, and I said, if you'd have shown 12-year-old me... If you had just given me a glimpse and show me a house with an arcade cab and a Neo Geo in, I would have just keeled over there and there.
Yeah.
I feel very, very fortunate.
We are very lucky. You know, the way things have gone, if you're into this scene and you've got a bit of money to burn, I guess, even if you haven't, if you... Look, you can still find a bargain out there.
Yeah, there are ways.
Do it the way I did. You know, I bought an empty cab. It didn't have a monitor. I was very lucky because the monitor was in a different machine.
Yeah.
Which was one of those quiz machines with a touch screen. It had a touch screen thing on the screen.
Yeah.
Only paid 15 quid for the machine with the monitor in. The monitor didn't last long. You know, it blew within 2 weeks of me installing it all.
Yeah.
And luckily, I managed to find Gunblade.
Gunblade.
Who fixed it for me. So, and it's been perfect ever since.
Well, I've got a hissy monitor.
Yeah.
I did a bit of Googling on what it sounds like if a monitor's got a cap that's blown and it sounds suspiciously the same.
Yeah.
So I think I need to hit up this Gunblade.
As long as it doesn't catch fire, you'll be all right.
Well, this is it.
It won't do that.
Well, I was looking around the back and there was no signs of any arcing or anything. It just sounds like it's just a faint hissing noise.
It doesn't sound
good, but hopefully nothing catastrophic.
Yeah.
He says. Well, mate, we need to move on because Now, we normally do the news here, but I must say, I haven't got a massive amount of news. Is anything?
No, there's a couple of sad stories I think we should cover.
Do you want to lead on that? I've got a couple of bits. Happy
news. Yeah, we'll get these out of the way and then we'll get some happier news mentions. Obviously, we've got the death of John Wilson, who ran Zenobi Games, which was like an adventure game publisher for the ZX Spectrum. I don't think they've done games for other systems.
No, I don't think so.
I might be wrong. But yeah, sadly, John died recently.
Yeah.
And the other big death, not that we normally cover deaths if you're...
The bird's death to marriage.
you know... They've got to be mentioned because these guys were very important to the retro gaming scene, especially in the UK. Jason Kelk. If you're a reader of Retro Gamer, you will probably recognise the name.
Yeah.
He used to do the homebrew section. Right. And he was a face in the retro game scene anyway, you know, especially for the C64.
Yeah.
I never actually met the guy, but I know a few people who were friends with him and they said, you know, he's one of the kindest people you could hope to meet.
Yeah.
And this made headlines, you know, because he was the second longest long COVID survivor. up until a couple of weeks ago.
Didn't someone say he was diagnosed? Because he was at Revival that we were at, wasn't he, in 2020?
He was, yeah.
Someone said he was diagnosed shortly after that, so there's every chance he may well have caught the damn thing at that event.
Yeah, obviously, it's, you know, at the time, I think me and Steve in particular were making bit of fun out of
well we all were mate I we was taking the mickey out we, to Steve with his hand sanitizer
yeah and... we didn't know exactly how serious it was at the time
but we were in blissful ignorance
and that was it was literally a week before we went into lockdown wasn't it that event
it was very sad.
It is very sad you know he was 49 which is no age really
Rest in peace and thoughts with the families of both of those guys. It's always sad. We are going to get, unfortunately, you know, the people who, you know, are heroes from back in the day.
We've already lost some. The big one for me was Joffa Smith because I used to speak to him quite regular, not in person, you know, just via email. He was such a character. He had such a great sense of humour, and then suddenly he dies. Rather unexpectedly, you know, all happened really quick, and we're at that age now, you know, these guys were usually older than a lot of our listeners and older than me, a lot of the programmers and graphic artists and people who worked in the games industry back then, and you know, time waits for no one really, days are numbered at some point, but
so we need to enjoy these people while they're here, and that's why, you know, people like Retro Hour and Paul Monahan on the mag side, you know, do great work in sitting these people down and actually getting their stories told straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
They do
great work while we can.
And you know, John and Jason were both important people. That's why I wanted to give them a mention on this episode. So rest in peace, guys.
So that's the Sadland version of our news section.
Yeah.
We've collected all our magic dust, so we're going to move on to the Happy Land section. And a couple of bits and pieces I've seen. Did you see that they've now ported the entirety of Dune 2 to the ZX Spectrum?
Yes, I've not played it. I saw a screenshot, but yeah, amazing, eh?
Well, apparently it was first ported in the 90s. They got the first couple of levels running as part of some game jam on the Spectrum. And only now, so 20 years later, has it been finished off. But now you can play, and it is available. If you go on Indie Retro News and search for Dune 2, you will see that you can now play the whole of that game on a ZX Spectrum 128K, which anyone who's played Dune 2, it's a reasonably complex game. I mean, by today's standards, but of the time. You never thought you'd get that running on a Speccy.
Well, you know, the Spectrum at the moment. Have you seen the racing game that's been released?
Oh, that's incredible. What's that one called?
It looks amazing. Travel Through Time Volume 1.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I've only had a very quick go of it, first couple of levels. Pretty amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah. The way these machines are being pushed now, I'd love to see a ZX Spectrum next version of that with a bit more colour.
Yeah.
But you know, if that had been released back in the day, Chase HQ was probably the most impressive racing game on the Spectrum, but this is something else.
Yeah, absolutely is. And the other thing I wanted to mention as well, Sonic the Hedgehog had his 30th birthday last week.
Yeah, it makes me feel very old.
I think it probably made a lot of people feel old. And did you see that Sega put on a concert, I think it was streamed, maybe on YouTube, it streamed somewhere, of an orchestral version of the whole Sonic soundtracks 1, 2 and 3.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Amazing. I don't have the same affinity for Sonic as I have for Mario. I was always and still am much more of a fan of the Mario series. So I don't have the same kind of nostalgia or affinity for the Sonic music. But hearing the Green Hill Zone tune played by an orchestra is something pretty special.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'll have to check that out.
Well, we're checking out.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to mention before we move on?
Not that I can think of. It'll probably be just as we hit stop on the record button.
Oh, we should have mentioned that.
Yes, but no, this, I think that's it for now.
Okay, so, mate, your favourite part?
Oh, no. You're not going to get me to pronounce loads of names that I can't pronounce, are you?
So what we do, we take one each. These are our wonderful, beautiful patrons.
I'm going to apologise now to all our lovely patrons who I can't pronounce your names.
You've just got to hope that you get the easy ones.
I won't. I know I won't. And
so it's a flip of a coin. You can go first, and we'll see how that we'll see how your numbers roll.
I'll go first, but it's bound to land on something dodgy. Okay, Chris Atwill.
Thank you to PM.
Thank you, Chris Silver.
Chris Hull.
Paul Bollard.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Ninjixel.
TJ.
Andy Hudson.
Ricardo Engel.
So far,
please,
so good.
Pronounce
mate.
Wrong.
Adrian Nelson.
Alistair Barr.
Heavy Metal Don.
Rose Tinted Spectrum and his lovely YouTube channel.
I feel like we should have the Top of the Pops music playing in the background. You know,
we
the
should.
Whole lot of love
we should.
There, so.
Edit it in.
Oh, Matthew W, I think.
James Bedley. He's one of the all-time top 10 favourite James Bedleys of all time.
Up four, Vito Beloshkin.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Mel Woods.
Zach Lands.
Richard Rogers.
New Inner 12, Kane and Rince Podcast.
Lamps and Worms hanging in there at number whatever he was.
Salvio Calabresi.
Stephen Bell.
Reese Wynn.
My old mate and fellow Vectrex owner, Clint Humphrey.
Always good for a happy meal, Clint Humphrey. Mark Billund.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
Good old John Shepherd.
Laurent Giroux.
Martin Stevenson.
This is working out very well for you, Ian.
It is. Keep going.
Aaron Morpin.
Jim Orbitz IT.
Yeah, you pronounced it right, you see.
I always do.
Jim quite rightly told me off for that. John Veal.
Thomas Scoffham.
Andy Marsh. Oh, there we go.
Patrick First.
That'll do. Lawrence De Bruyne.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Stuttard.
Matt Sullivan.
Manus Espiona.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And finally, my old mate, Blake Brett.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
While we're
on... Oh, I'll win! I didn't pronounce any dodgy ones.
Not that any of our patrons
are dodgy. Yeah, exactly. Not that your names are dodgy. I'm just a simple cockney who can't pronounce things properly.
That's just normally people think that's normally the comic highlight of episodes that you and Steve feature on. So I feel like we've let people down.
They'll be laughing their heads off. It's great entertainment.
While we're here and we're talking about Blake Brett, Blake has very kindly organised for us some amazing quizzes over the past few months. He's organising another one.
Really?
It's going to be on Saturday, the 17th of July, kicking off at 8 p.m. Retro Quiz 3, followed by a Half-Life multiplayer session. And a huge spoiler for what's won the vote for next month, it's Half-Life. We'll formally reveal that later.
But yes.
Yeah. So, guys, if you're not on Discord and you're listening to this and you'd like to take part in a quiz, normally gets around 20, 25 people in there, come and join us on Discord or send one of us a message and we'll let you have the details. But Discord really is where the place to be, where it will all take place. Saturday, the 17th of July. I'm going to try and make it.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'll try and get on there if I can.
Yeah, Saturday nights are a bit tricky for me usually, but I'll do my best. Yeah, big thank you to Blake.
Yeah.
You ready to talk mayhem?
Yeah, let's give it a go.
Let's give it a go.
Is the thing on? So if anybody's listening, please send help. Chris has got me locked up in this basement and he won't let me out before after that they finished recording because he really wants Dean for himself this time. I mean, he's gone crazy. I don't know what to do, really. So please, if you listen to this, if you hear me, send help. I'm in Chris's basement. I'd like to at least be fit and it would be nice to have a bathroom break as well, Chris. But I guess while we're here, I might as well just give you my thoughts on Mayhem in Monsterland. So Mayhem in Monsterland is not a game I've spent a lot of time with before. It's released so late in the C64's lifetime that I would have been playing on my Amiga 500 at this point in time, and maybe even getting close to the point where I would be getting my first PC and becoming a PC gamer instead with my 486SX25. But, well, let's talk about the game instead. So Mayhem in Monsterland is a game that completely blew my mind when I turned it on. It's really, really pretty. It's very, very well controlled. Has great sounds. And the graphics, the whole fidelity of this game is just brilliant. But for some reason, I couldn't get into it. I didn't like it. So for the first week, I'd like to say, I turned it on every once in a while. I played through the sad part of the first level, eventually got to the happy part, but something was missing. I initially just put it down to bad level design or bad game design, really. I mean, I didn't like the mechanic of having to run back and forth in this platforming level and searching for stuff. But then I gave it a bit more time. And after a while, I really began to appreciate this game. It is a graphical wonder. It does control beautifully. So in the words of Retro Game Squad, this was a true hot butter through knife feeling when I was playing this game. It's brilliantly done on the C64. And there is a really good game there, in fact. But you need... It's one of those games like... Not as badass, but like when you're playing Rick Dangerous, a game I love as well. You need to learn the layout of the different levels. You need to learn where the exit is. You need to learn where you need to go to pick up the different stars and so on and so forth. And the enemy placement, learning about the enemy placement becomes paramount when you get to the later stages. And of course, that means in this day and age, it's going to take you forever to get through this game. But that was viewed as a good thing back in the day, because then that meant you had got value for money, right? So I would really recommend you play this today just to see what the little C64 could do. This is a platformer that in fidelity rivals what you saw on the NES easily. And it is a great game. But do play it with save states. We've got some listeners here who've actually finished it using save states. And that's probably the way to play games like this today. Unless you have a lot of time you want to dedicate to a single title, I'd suggest playing Mayhem in Monsterland using save states. I haven't done so myself. I've only played through the first two levels, both sad and happy versions. And I will pick this game up every once in a while and try to get a bit further, but I'll never finish it on real hardware. I will be going to an emulator and using save states when I finally find the will to go all the way through it. So, but this was a great month. I really enjoyed playing along. I wish I could have been able to record the episode, but well, as you already know, Chris has locked me in the basement, so there's not much I can do, really. I hope somebody hears this and that I get let out before Christmas, but let's see.
So, the Game Club Game of the Month in June was Mayhem in Monsterland. Now, the theme was games released late in their commercial lives. Now, Dean, you and Steve chose Mayhem in Monsterland, and you were almost going to choose Chaos Engine 2.
Yeah.
Why did you choose Mayhem in Monsterland?
Because we wasn't too sure about Chaos Engine 2.
No.
I played it back in the day, but not a lot. I remember it being a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah. What, you did play it back in the day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chaos Engine 2, that is.
Oh, Chaos Engine 2, okay.
Yeah, not this. So I think that's why we ended up going with this. We thought it had great reviews at the time. I don't think any of us had played it. Maybe no. Matt had played it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we thought we'd give it a go. And this was before Steve
became a pop star.
Became a pop star and left us. He hasn't left us, by the way, people. He will be back.
So Steve was the one who convinced you to choose Mayhem. And then, of course, did what Steve
Yeah, he'd done a runner.
Done a runner.
But to be fair, to be fair, we didn't think we'd be doing the episode at that point. I don't think.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Because, no, because you and Mads suddenly wanted, you said, it's all right if we have a rest one out.
Yeah, and then we said, so this is the theme, guys. Off you pop and choose your game. So well, don't maybe. Give me that.
Maybe. I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
You knew exactly what you were getting yourself into.
I don't. Well, I thought my partner in crime would be with me all the way.
So did you play this game? So you didn't play this game back
then?
I didn't play
this game, no, because, remember, I was a Spectrum boy. I didn't have a C64. I played one. I actually went out of a girl head one.
Did you? What did you do that for?
I know. It didn't end
Spectrum
well.
Spectrum all the way.
But, yeah, by the time I had this, you know, the Spectrum had been packed away. Mm. I had an Amiga 600.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was no mayhem in Monsterland for me back in 1993.
Were you aware of it back in the day? Do you remember it? Do you remember any buzz around it?
No, not really. No, I think I was concentrating more on a 16-bit scene, specifically the Amiga, you know. I did become aware of the game probably when, you know, I started looking back into the history of video games, the birth of Retro Asylum, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and then it does stand out when you start to look at the history of the C64. It's almost like the parting swan song of the system, isn't it, really?
Yeah, you know, because the Spectrum, I think it had its last commercial game. It might have been 93. I think it was 92. Yeah,
around then.
Yeah, and the Amstrad pretty much bailed out around the same time.
Well, the Amstrad had that lease of life, didn't it? Because it was still massive in France in the early 90s. So it actually had some really good titles going into the 90s.
Yeah, in the early 90s, though. You know, I'm pretty sure the Spectrum magazines went out first. I remember the last issue of Your Sinclair. And Amstrad Action, I think, was still on sale. At that point,
it went Commodore mags kind of morphed into the Amiga mags, didn't they? So it's more difficult.
Did. You had Commodore Format, which I think covered both, didn't it?
It did until it went full on Amiga. And Commodore Force, of course, was Zap, wasn't it? In its second incarnation.
Mm. Yeah, but no, I don't remember a great deal about the game at the time. I might have been aware of it, but
no. Yeah, me too. I mean, I like our histories with on the computer side are very similar. So I was Spectrum until I got my Amiga, and then off down the PC route. So I can't remember. I would have had a Commodore machine at this point for sure. I definitely had my Amiga 500 at this point. But I think because I'd never owned a C64, I didn't really pay any attention. If I seen, you know, back then, if I'd seen something in a magazine about a C64 game, I probably just would have skipped over it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because this game actually, probably, if you stuck it side by side with some Amiga platforms, it would compare quite favourably.
I think it'd give some Amiga platform games a run for their money, really. Yeah. So especially just technically.
Some key facts then about the game. So it was developed by Apex Computer Productions, which essentially was John and Steve Rowlands, the Rowlands brothers. Interestingly, published by Apex as well. And we will come back to that in a sec, because previous Apex games were published by Thalamus. It was released for the Commodore 64 only, never got a port onto the 16-bit machines, which is a very conscious thing that the guys did. And it was released in 1993. We don't know exactly when in 93, because it's not like today when there was a big release date. It seeped out sometime in 1993. The exact date appears to be lost to history. It's a platform game, and I will do an impression of Mads, because this is the bit where he would normally do a very succinct summary of what the game is. So I'll try and do that. It's a platform game split over five levels, where each level is split into two phases, if you like. You have a first phase, which is a sad phase, and you have to collect. And the colours are all very, and we will come back to this, all very pale and colourless.
Yeah,
you have
the music's rather gloomy, isn't it?
Exactly. And you have to collect certain bags of magic dust. So many bags unlocks an exit, which then takes you to a happy version of the same level, where you have to collect D different pickups. That's magic. That's stars in the happy versions. And if you collect sufficient number of stars, it opens the exit and you move on to the next level. And you essentially rinse and repeat for 5 levels. And you are done if you're very, very skillful or are cheating. Because this game is tricky. Very
tricky. It certainly
is,
yeah.
So did you play any of the previous, have you got much history with the previous Apex games? Are you a Creatures fan?
No, that's another game that I've been meaning to play for years because Glenn used to bang on about Creatures to me all the time.
I never have played it. Yeah.
It's strange. I love the C64. I do play it fairly regularly, but it's more the earlier games and, you know, the games I compare a lot to the games that I had on the Spectrum.
Yeah.
And I guess because they are later games, I've not got to them.
Mm.
Strangely enough, I do need to try them.
Yeah, because they were late games in and of themselves. I mean, Creatures was 1990 and Creatures 2 was 92, so that they are late games themselves.
Yeah, they're late games themselves. You know, this is even later. I mean, the C64, it outsold the Spectrum. It has still had that user base. Mm. While everyone else was jumping on the consoles of the time and the 16-bit machines, you know, for the publishers still to be able to make games, and I'm guessing they were still making some sort of profit, maybe not in 1993, which is why it was really the last year of games coming out, but you know, they must have had some sort of faith in the market that these games were going to sell.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of my research on this, belated research, because normally I would be doing research throughout the month, but I've belated research has come from an issue of Retro Gamer from a couple of years ago. It's 170, it's probably about 3 years ago actually. Yeah. Issue 172. There's a big feature on Mayhem in Monsterland there, and because the Rowlands brothers, they don't seem to be that visible in the community. You know, I was looking around for interviews that they've done with podcasts.
No,
there was
I did watch an interview on YouTube with them.
Is that one where he's sitting down? He's outside
in the park. Yeah. And they seem like really nice guys, you know. Because interviewing programmers, you soon. I'm not knocking anyone, but sometimes they're so into their coding.
Yeah.
You know, they're not the most chattier people, and they can be, because of the job they do, they're on their own a lot of the time or work in small teams. They're not very chatty.
Yeah.
But these guys seem proper down to earth and can hold a really good conversation and talk about their games, which, you know, is not always the case with all programmers.
Yeah, they do seem quite open. And what they said about Mayhem was after they'd done Creatures, you know, they'd had some success with the kind of cutie, although Creatures can be quite brutal at times with those torture screens. It's got a kind of cutie aesthetic. So they wanted to stick with that. And then they did contemplate moving on to the 16-bit platforms. But I think that in the interview with Retro Gamer, they were just really honest and said, you know, well, at the time, we knew the C64 architecture. We'd had some...
They loved that machine.
Yeah, they
well,
did. And you know, it was what they were comfortable with.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps a lack of ambition, because they would have known that releasing a game for the C64 in 1993, it wasn't going to sell bucket loads.
Maybe, yeah. But, you know, if you're passionate about a machine and you want to keep that spark alive for it, and obviously they've published this themselves, you know, why not? I mean, it would have been... I was surprised that there wasn't an Amiga version.
I am as
least.
Well. Yeah. The publisher
not so much for the ST, no. Because that itself was dying out around that time. So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the publishing side of the game is really interesting because even though they knew it wouldn't sell loads, they knew they'd make a lot more money than they made with the Creatures games because they were published by Thalamus.
Yeah.
Well, they say that Thalamus they didn't receive a penny for either of the Creatures games.
Really? Yeah. So you hear this a lot from publishers back in the day.
Yeah, and Thalamus went bust owing them all the royalties for Creatures and Creatures 2.
Yeah.
Now, if you take them at their word, then that is pretty shocking. So yeah. hence the decision to self-publish Mayhem, and obviously yep. then 100% of it went to them.
Yeah.
Which good luck to them. So they didn't port it to the 16-bit systems, and it remains therefore as one of the final successful commercial C64 games.
Mm.
They didn't have a massive career after Mayhem, interestingly. No. So I don't know whether you've seen any of this, but they did a couple of Matt Hoffman's Pro BMX games together.
Right.
The last one being in 2002, they did Matt Hoffman's Pro BMX 2. And that is where their story ends.
Oh, that's a shame.
It is a shame. So I'm sure they're still doing something now, but they were quite the pair. I mean, John did a lot of the programming, or all of the programming, although yep. he was helped by a guy called Andy Roberts, who I don't know too much about. And Steve did the graphics and the music, and they kind of jointly did the design. I think right. by the sounds of their interviews and their dev diary in Commodore format, normally over many, many beers on a Friday evening.
Yeah.
Heavily inspired by the platformers of the day. Platformers were 10 for a penny at this time. And, of course, the two big ones, the flagship characters on Nintendo and Sega systems, Mario and Sonic, were massive influences. I think from reading their development diaries in this interview in Retro Gamer, I think when they started, Mario was more of an influence. They wanted that geometric design and
yeah.
your very clear platforms. But I think as the game developed and the design developed, and they stumbled upon this speed burst that we'll fast mayhem, which we'll come on to in a second. Eventually, I think when they look back at it, they say, actually, we can see more of Sonic now in this game. And I think anyone who's played it can probably see that.
Yeah.
It does get very, very fast.
Mm.
Like all good games, there's a plot. I love a plot. And this dun, is dun, taken, dun. this is taken from somewhere. I can't remember whether this was the manual or somewhere where it got to. I'll just read it because I think it's important to set the context.
Yep.
So the plot: an apprentice magician dinosaur living in Monsterland, Theosaurus, who was a character from a game that they were working on a couple of years before and canned. Apparently, they brought him back, okay. And it was that the fact that they had that character why they decided in the end to do make a dinosaur game. Made a mistake while practicing a spell one day. He turned the lands Jellyland, Pipeland, Spottyland, Cherryland, and Rockland into sad places void of colour or life. Theo began living in a hidden cave to avoid the wrath of the other monsters until discovered one day by the hero of the story, Mayhem. Mayhem promised to bring Theo the necessary magic dust to transform Monsterland to its previous happy state. There you go.
Wow.
Doesn't that enrich your life?
It does. I can see offers for a movie license flooding in there now that we're all aware of the plot.
There we go. Unfortunately, it never got a conversion to the big screen, unfortunately. No. So fundamentally then, this game is a platform game. And of course, with any platform game, one of the most important aspects of the gameplay are the controls. Now, I know that you had a bit of problem with this. How did you find the controls, Dean?
It's that inertia, isn't it?
Yeah.
And up to jump. I mainly played this using a joypad, which isn't what the ideal. C64 had. It works better with a joystick.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
There's no two ways about that. But I still found it frustrating to control at times. Especially when you're high up and, you know, like you've got the birds flying about.
Yeah.
Because at least the levels that I've played, because I didn't get very far in this game. It's rock hard.
How far did you get?
Only onto the second level.
Okay.
Pipelands, yep. And it was the second bit, you know, the happy section that I got onto. I couldn't bloody finish it.
Yeah.
The screen doesn't scroll up.
No, it doesn't.
No, so you hit your head on the top of the screen. So if you're trying to jump on a bird, you don't go high enough and it hits you. So
you just don't jump onto that bird then.
No, that's what I've discovered. But, you know, at first, when I'm first, you know, on the first level, first few times I played it, I'm thinking, am I supposed to be kidding these things? Because, you know, you're looking for the stars, aren't you, on the sad sections.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise, I just thought, you know, you scrolled left to right. But you can go back and then find an enemy that you haven't killed or jumped on to find that star, which opens up the other bit where you go into the happy section.
So I was
getting quite frustrated with it, especially, like I say, when you're higher up, you try and jump on enemies and they're too far high that you can't jump on their heads to kill them.
Because that's what you do, of course. That's the way you kill enemies, like good old Mario. You kill enemies by jumping on their heads, or when you get your speed burst that you don't get until the happy part.
That's right. Yeah, you get that on the happy sections. Yeah.
And then he gets his horn out, doesn't he? And then you can race into these baddies, and
it makes the game. I found that so much more fun to do.
Yeah.
Than trying to jump on them.
Yeah.
Especially with that inertia and, like I say, where it doesn't scroll upwards like most console games would.
Yeah, yeah. The presentation's lovely, though, isn't it? You know, you get...
The presentation, you can't knock the game technically.
No.
You know, the animation of when you kill the characters.
Yeah, and you get to burst into stars.
The little stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's faultless. You know, the character itself is done with high-res sprite.
Yeah.
He looks nice. All the bad guys are a little bit more blocky, but they're not badly drawn. Everything's animated really well. Mm. It's as slick as anything. You know, this game, it scrolls. Obviously, it's the C64, but occasionally you do get bad scrolling games on the C64. This is beautiful. It moves so nice.
So smooth, isn't it?
This is what I was saying to you about, you know, there's Amiga platform games that this puts to shame, technically.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe not in terms of gameplay, although there's a lot of Amiga platformers I don't enjoy. But, yeah, this is the closest thing to a console game on the C64, I think.
Yeah. The one thing that the magazine's called out is, you know, at the start of each level, you get that preview almost, like the terrain.
Yeah,
sort of three or four layers of parallax. I mean, that's something which I looked at and thought, yeah, that's quite nice. But then when I read a couple of the reviews, and they really did go on about this, I thought, I better go and have a closer look. But I think unless you're there at the time and you don't see what other games didn't do, I think it's difficult now to go back and judge that for how impressive that must have been at the time.
Yeah, it's just a very slick, you know, the way it's presented, because
the music
is, you've got an intro if you want to watch it, you know,
good old multi-load.
I've only played the cart version of this, so luckily I didn't have to put up with any of that. I mean, I'm guessing this was released on tape, wasn't it?
I don't think it was released on tape.
No,
I couldn't find a tape file for it.
Oh, right, okay.
So I think I think the original release
that would have limited the marketplace for it, you know.
Yeah.
In the UK, at least, most people only had a tape deck. They didn't go for the disc drives were too expensive.
I could be wrong about that, but I definitely had a look to see whether I could find a .tap file for it anywhere, and I couldn't.
Right.
So, it appears to be only disc game. But obviously, I've been playing I bought the, and I know a lot of our listeners did as well, the Mayhem in Monsterland 25th anniversary.
Yeah, it's re-released, wasn't it?
Released by Cytronic. So they did a release for the 15th anniversary and then also for the 25th. And it's nice, a really nice package. And whilst we're on the subject of our listeners, why don't we have a listen to the first of our listener clips?
Oh, yes.
So let's have a listen to what SD Matt thinks of the game. First time contributor, here he is.
Hi, this is SD Matt, and this is my take on Mayhem and Monsterland. In 1994, I was still actively using my Commodore 64 as my primary computer, but I'd never heard of Mayhem and Monsterland. This is most likely because I live in the United States, and the game was only released as a PAL game. If the game were available in the US, I likely would have purchased it and played it to death. The game itself is enjoyable, enjoyable, but it's also extremely frustrating. A lot of the gameplay reminds me of the Japanese version of Super Mario Bros. 2, aka the Lost Levels, where you have to make blind jumps trying to land on a platform that you can't see. It all means that it takes several deaths, memorizations, and luck to make any progress in the game. These are all elements that I found in Mayhem and Monsterland. The game itself is visually appealing, and it pushes the Commodore 64 to its limits by employing a few bugs in the chips as exploits to better the game. I think this initially caused compatibility problems with my version of Vice, because it kept crashing. After updating it, it went away, so I was able to play it. In terms of audio, both the sound effects of the music show off the power of the SID chip, which put the Commodore 64 ahead of its competition at the time of its release. Sound and music are awesome for a C64 game. Parts of the game that I enjoy, in addition to the audio and visuals for the games, were some of the secrets that were in the game. A few of the levels require that you gather stars by finding ways to walk through walls. Finding the exit to each level also proved to be challenging at times. This particular challenge I didn't mind, but sometimes it got frustrating as your timer ticked away. There were also several points in the game where you had to jump across large ravines by bouncing off the backs of birds. Sometimes this was very easy, other times it was insanely difficult. I've got mixed feelings as to whether this game has aged well. In 1994, developers extended gameplay of their titles by making them difficult so that it took players a long time to beat the game. This was often done because the game itself could not be expanded due to the limitations of the platforms in terms of memory, storage, etc. After playing the game for a month, I don't know that I'll be revisiting it anytime soon. I was able to beat the game, but only by using save states.
Yep, so that was a good clip. Enjoyed that. So, how far did you get into the game, Chris?
So I got to the happy part of level 3, which was...
Oh, I don't feel too bad then. Which was, I thought you would have got a lot further.
Well, that's four. Well, I tell you, by that time, the game
is
very tough. And I think that starts to become one of the problems with it, because this game, knowing the levels and knowing the layout of the levels is absolutely crucial. Because as well as the challenge of trying to find where the magic dust is and where the stars are, so it's magic dust in the sad versions and stars in the happy versions, you've got a timer. You've got a limited number of lives. I think you start off with three lives.
And you've got a few credits to continue.
Yeah, and you get two or three credits, but you've got a timer counting down. Now, the first few times through a level, you're going to be exploring these levels. I mean, I would go left, all the way left, and then all the way right. Yeah. But you start to realize where the more accessible magic dust. So when you hit an enemy, normally the more trickier to kill enemies normally reveal on the sad levels, a bag of magic dust. Yeah. And there's more bags of magic dust than you need to open the exit.
Yeah.
So once you become familiar with the levels, you very quickly get to know, right, okay, well, I need 10 bags of magic dust, and I now know where 10 reasonably accessible enemies are, so I'll just go straight for them down the pipe. So the more you play, actually, you start to get quicker and quicker going through those early levels. Yeah. There's also, dotted around the levels, some nice little secrets. So the red hearts that you see dotted around will give you an extra life. The blue hearts will restore your life, because it's not so brutal that it's one hit kill.
No, you got two hits.
You get two hits. Yeah. So it gives you a chance. And then once you get one hit, your lives counter will flash to let you know that you are on, you've had your one hit. But you can restore those. The other thing that this game did, which again makes it's a tick in the kind of not too difficult box, is it gives you these checkpoints throughout the levels.
Yes, yeah.
So, and it allows you to choose where your checkpoints are, which is pretty cool. Because games like Mario, obviously, would if you didn't go back to the start of the level, the game would impose upon you usually one checkpoint throughout the level. Here, you've almost got to remind me.
There's a number of them, isn't there?
Yeah, there's normally three or four. They remind me of the little gates in Shovel Knight, or the lights that you light up.
That's basically what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you go through them and then they light up. And that then, if you die or if you run out of time, you'll go back to that part rather than... But you can obviously choose to ignore them. You can actually make the game...
Yeah, just jump over them.
You make the game more difficult. So there is a lot going on with these levels. And actually, it does really reward exploration. You find secrets, you find extra lives, you find things that multiply your score as you go on through the levels. And I mean, the score is a little bit of a... I always find in games like this, you know, why... They're almost like obligatory you had to put a score counter in there. Every game had to have one. Mm. But you can find things that will multiply your score. You find things that will give you invincibility for a short period of time, things that will freeze time for 30 seconds. So there's plenty to see and do. But what it boils down to is you have to find your certain quota of these things to move on. And once you know the levels, you can say, well, right, I'll go there, 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 and there, and then I know where the exit is, so I'll plan my route, so the last one I pick up will be right near the exit. Job done. So I could normally get through the first level, Jellyland, Happy and Sad, and the sad section of Pipeland, really without losing a life.
Right.
So I'd end up, because there's a section in the happy version of Pipeland where you can get about 5 extra lives in short succession. You have to go through a bit of the scenery and then you kill these enemies and they each of them reveal extra lives.
Gotcha.
So I could end up with about 12 lives going into Spottyland.
Mm.
And in Spottyland, the game really picks up because the enemies are a lot more difficult. The enemies that you have to kill to get the magic dust in the sad version of Spottyland are way, way harder. Hidden in trees.
Are they moving about faster or?
Well, they do things like, so you don't really see this on the first two levels, but on the third level, you start to get enemies that have like spikes on their front.
Right.
So you might have to wait until they turn their back and then you have to speed burst into them.
Gotcha. So you can't just run into them like you do with the others.
No, because then you'll get hit if you hit the spiky part. Or some of the baddies have spikes on their head. So you have to just completely avoid them.
Right.
And again, the first time, because the enemy sprites aren't as clearly defined as your mayhem sprite, sometimes it can be a little bit difficult when you first see them to know, okay, well, is that something that's going to kill me if I go and attack it? Or is it not?
That's the problem I had with the game in general. It was like on the first level, before I picked up all the magic dust, Magic dust. There's a bit of platform that's like marked out hazard, and once you've collected everything, then it animates.
That's right.
And you can go down there, but
yeah.
Before you do that, you just walk over that, you drop down and die.
Oh, do you? I hadn't.
Yeah, and there's no warning of that.
Yeah.
You know, it just looks like a platform that you can jump on, but no, you can't. You just fall through it. That sort of thing that annoyed me.
There are definite elements which are unfair, as I said, especially the first time you get onto levels. I mean, some of the enemy placements are so unfair. You know, you get things in the later levels which are constantly firing these little balls.
Yeah.
You know, and the game wants you to use this speed burst. It does. I mean, if you watch a playthrough on YouTube of really people who are really good at it, they will just bomb through the stages, just killing everything. They barely stop using the speed burst.
Right.
But of course, anyone who's not so familiar with the levels, as soon as you turn that speed burst on for more than a couple of seconds, you fall down a hole.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to know where you're going.
You've got to know exactly the layout of the levels. And that's what the guys say in this interview, that it really rewards perseverance and really familiarizing yourself with the levels. And it's fine on the first couple of levels, but it would have taken a lot of time to get so familiar with the later levels without using save states. I mean, I was playing this on real hardware, without using save states, it just gets so, so difficult. And then you get the lives bug. So did you encounter this?
No.
So this was a famous bug from the original commercial release, that there was something wrong with the code. And it was fixed, and there is a thing out there on the internet which shows you can poke into the program and you can fix this.
Right.
But once you go above 10 lives, there is something wrong with the code around the live counter that if you lose a life, if you have more than 10 lives and you lose a life, so let's say you've got 11 lives, you don't go back down to 10, you go down to 0. So you're automatically on your last life.
That's not fair, is it?
Well, it killed, it killed it for me, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't encounter that. I'm glad
you never got that many lives, did you?
No, I didn't get it far. I never discovered any of these secrets that you've mentioned.
Yeah, well, they don't. I mean, you must have seen, especially on the early levels, you must have seen like stars out of reach or hearts out of reach.
Thought I was being rubbish at the game.
Yeah, there's gaps in the scenery. If you look closely enough, you can see hidden platforms.
Right. Okay.
They are there, but that lives bug killed it. I mean, the point is that you can amass loads of lives in the early stages of the game to take forward then into the much harder and the levels 4 and 5.
Mm.
But of course you can't because you lose all your lives.
That's
complete
mad.
Pain.
Yeah.
I believe in the 15th anniversary release, Cytronic actually fixed it and it wasn't, that bug wasn't there. But in the 25th anniversary release, and I'm playing the genuine commercial release from Cytronic, it's got
it's
the
there again. Ah.
Yeah. So it's a shame, really.
Yeah.
Because it meant that there was no way I was going to get much further than the happy part of Spottyland, not without using emulation and save states.
Yeah.
But what does the game do well? It's very playable. I mean,
it is very playable, but
it feels really good to control.
Yeah, I just found it frustrating in places.
Yeah.
But I think, again, if I'd played the game at the time, I would have been so amazed with the way it looked and played and sounded that I probably would have persevered with it to see what else it has to offer, you know? Whereas now, it looks lovely, but it's still just a C64 game.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not a game that you can just pick up and play. Not if you want to get anything out of it. If you'd bounce right off it because it's so difficult.
Yeah, you got to play it quite a bit of them.
You've got to persevere with it. I found it charming. I found the presentation stunning. I really like the way it gives you all the information you need right there on the screen. You've got your stars or your magic dust quota down the bottom there.
Yep.
Tells you your lives all there. It's so, the UI is so nicely presented. The controls are so responsive. I was playing this with, I've got one of those, you know, those joysticks. So playing with a joystick up to jump never bothers me.
No, that's the thing. I think, you know, when you've got a joypad in your hands, you're so used to playing other platform games like console games, you're pressing the other button and you forget. Whereas with a joystick, it never really bothered me, you know, especially back then.
It's
just one of those things. Obviously, I was using the Mister a lot to play it.
Yeah,
and it just meant unplugging a joypad and plugging a joystick in. And the only USB joystick I've got is the one that come with the E64.
Ah.
You know, that clicky, nasty, horrible thing.
Yeah, but it still
played better with that than it did with a joypad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really noisy.
Yeah, no, it absolutely would. The where you press the fire button to engage his speed burst. That felt a bit fiddly at first, but once I got used to it, you know, it was, you have to build up a little bit of speed with his inertia before you press the fire to get his really speed going.
Yeah.
And then that, once you get right up to speed, I mean, once you do know the levels, it does actually feel pretty,
like I said, once I got onto the happy sections and you could do that, I was enjoying the game a lot more. Rather than I kept slowly plodding along. All the enemies move about and you've got that inertia, so you've got to try and stop at the right time and then jump on them, and they've already started moving the other way. Obviously you can move you control the jump, move left and right
there,
but at times I cocked it up and I just found it really frustrating.
It is so frustrating when you just miss time your jump, especially on the later levels where you've got to do pretty long jumps, and you've got that's to land. It. Yeah, on
you've
the
got
body.
To land on them after doing a long yeah. jump, you know, and they're moving about. You think, oh, you sodis.
Yeah, it does.
And
take...
if you do it on the second hit, obviously you're dead.
Yeah, it does
and
take
you've
a bit
got
of
to
judgment.
Go back and.
Yeah, yeah. I must say, like when on the first time you got to do levels, I would lose my lives almost instantly. I would burn yeah. through all the credits, just trying to learn where these baddies are.
I'm one of these players as well. I like to try and just do it on one credit.
Yeah.
With computer games or arcade games, you know, if there's a credit system, I don't like using an extra credit. It's just yeah. me.
It
I'm
felt like here,
that.
Though, that they would intended to be extra lives. That's the way I
yeah,
look
I think
it.
They definitely were. You needed to... Yeah, it's practice makes perfect, isn't it?
This game is doable. Right,
practice didn't make perfect in my case.
In fact, let's listen to King Kong Groover, because he actually did finish it.
He did?
Oh,
okay.
Using save states, but he did finish it. He makes an interesting point about where the difficulty curve goes. So let's listen to him.
Right.
Hey, this is Reese, aka King Kong Groover, here to talk today about Mayhem in Monsterland. Now, I was a C64 gamer, and as a C64 gamer, I was very familiar with Mayhem in Monsterland. I still have my Commodore 64 when the game came out. I remember the old Commodore format reviews and everything of that nature. So, yeah, and the two demo worlds that were given away... on the front cover of Commodore Format. I remember all that so well. And it was interesting to revisit it. And overall, it's okay. It's not 100% game. I don't think you can achieve perfection, but it is a technical masterpiece for the Commodore 64. The only thing is, it is really hard. I did manage to complete the game. I did cheat. I remapped my joystick so that up was mapped to a button, so it's more like a traditional, you know, console platformer like Sonic or Mario or something of that nature. I also used save states as well, quite liberally towards the end, because as soon as you hit World 3, it can be quite... can be quite tricky, so yeah, I did all that. I cheated, but I saw the end of the game. As I said, I mean, it's not a bad game. I think if the level design was a little bit better, it would be held in higher regard. And there is, yeah, it's a technical marvel. Yeah, just a little bit too tricky, and I think this is probably going to be not the first time you've heard that today, or... Maybe it is, and I'm the first one, but it is very, very hard. But yeah, decent enough game. So take care, and looking forward to next month.
So thank you there, King Kong Groover. And I think what I found by watching some YouTube videos of the later levels was that actually the game, it probably doesn't get increasingly difficult. I think it kind of peaks around the happy version of the third level. And then actually, if you can get good enough to get through that, you're probably going to be okay through to the end of the game. I reckon if it wasn't for the lives bug, I think I could have given it a pretty good go. Not on one credit, but with using all the credits, I think I could have got to the end of the game.
I still want to give... I say this every time we play a game, you know, I need to go back to it and give it more time.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
For me, I'm one of these people, I play a game for half hour, and if I'm not getting anywhere, it goes off.
Yeah, and that
I'm
is
terrible
a game.
Like that.
Yeah,
and that was a game I was struggling with. I really did struggle. But I could see, yeah, I found it as frustrating as anything, and I think at first I made my feelings clear on the chat, you know, yeah. Mads was agreeing with me.
He was.
I know he wasn't enjoying it at first, but I think he changed his mind afterwards,
he did.
Didn't he?
He yeah. did, and you will. I think this is definitely a game that if you play it for long enough, you will start to see, the good in it, for sure. You know, when I first booted it up, I thought, this is amazing. Like, this is a C64 game. This is incredible. You know, compared to what I was playing back on my 8-bit machine when I was a kid, this is just... unbelievable.
Well, this is it, you know, because at the time, also, you had the Master System and NES, very popular, but both of those systems suffered badly with flicker.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
There's none of that on this. This is flawless.
Yeah, it's so smooth. And the way... And then I went to, almost like the Five Stages of Grief. I then kind of, you know, the novelty of how good it looks and sounds wore off a little bit.
Yeah.
I then got really frustrated with the game because I was suffering so many unfair and frustrating deaths. And I was cursing the design. I said, oh, God, if only this was designed by somebody who was Japanese, this would be a great game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's unfair to the Rollins brothers.
It is. And I think a lot of... Obviously, there is a big difference between European design games and Japanese games.
The latter's much better generally, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to gameplay, you know... But this is a technical marvel. It's not terrible to play. It's just perseverance, I think.
You've got to get over the hump. You know, one of the interesting things about this interview was they were talking about the testing of it. And they really did test it. I mean, it was tested to death. You can tell a lot of love's gone into the game.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem was that they tested it. So they were really good at it.
Well, they knew where all the hidden things were.
They kept making it harder. Because by the end of it, they thought, this is too... We can get through this in 20 minutes. It's too easy. So they just kept making it harder. They kept changing the enemy placements and making it gradually, gradually harder.
Mm.
And obviously what that means then is for people like us who aren't going to play it for 50 hours, we really struggle with it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, at least it got tested to some degree.
But
a lot of games back then didn't.
I definitely got over the hump, and I felt like I was pretty good at it. You know, when I was playing this a lot, middle of the month, I was playing this a lot. I felt like I was, you know, pretty decent at it. And as I said, I could get through those first 2.5 levels, you know, almost without losing a life. Certainly up to the third world without losing a life.
Yeah, that's good.
But then the lives bug. It killed it.
That killed it for you. Yeah.
And that's a big shame.
It's a shame.
Yeah. So, Cytronic, if you're listening, fix it, please. Be nice. No, I paid good money for my game. I'd like it to be not buggy. Thank you very much. We have to talk about that review that it got in Commodore format. Commodore format had chronicled the game's development by having a development diary with the Rollins brothers, which is still really readable. Now, I read the whole thing. It's done over towards six or seven months. And they chart it from the very first look. We're looking to make a game. We've decided we're going to make a C64 game. We want a game that is going to be featured a cute character, and they take it right through really. And so reading those developer diaries, it made me realize that these guys just didn't realize how inspired they were. You know, there's a lot of we just decided to do this, and then the game unfolded in front of us. If only it was so easy to make a game, Aideen.
Oh, I wish I could program like that.
Did Advanced Lawnmower Simulator next? Did that just appear in front of you?
Well, obviously, that was based. That's a modern version of a classic. It was a joke published in an April Fool's issue of Your Sinclair in 1988, and I just thought, you know, it was lockdown. I was bored. What can I do? And that was it. Not a lot.
were you inspired by Mario and Sonic? No, probably not.
No, not for that game. But for most, I think if you're doing a platform game, especially around that time,
yeah.
I mean, it looks like a console game.
Yeah.
As you say, the character itself has got a hint of Sonic about it, especially when you've got the speed run thing going on.
Yeah.
They were obviously influenced by older games around at that time.
But 100%.
Yeah, do you think that's got anything to do with the diary being featured in the magazine? And
yeah.
It's like a last hurrah for the C64. Let's give it a really good review. And it, you know, like I said, if I had a C64 at that time, the machine... It's starting to dwindle on releases, and then
you'd be
get this game
for it, wouldn't you?
Exactly, yeah. I can imagine that's why it got, you know, such a high score.
Yeah.
But
it got 97% in Commodore Force, and they didn't run a development diary.
No, they were obviously impressed with it. Did it get reviewed in CMVG?
And, I don't think so.
That's a shame, because how would it, you know, they're reviewing console games, they're playing all the console games at that time. I'd like to have seen what they thought of it, how it compared to the console releases.
It's got good reviews, though, even when people like Retro Gamer, and maybe Retro Gamer would be slightly biased because it's a retro game, but Retro Gamer gave it a really good retrospective review. But even Eurogamer reviewed it, because this got a European virtual console release on the Wii.
Yeah,
unbelievable. I didn't know they released C64 games on the virtual console.
No, I obviously, you know, while we've been doing this episode, playing the game, we've done a bit of research. Obviously, you've done a lot more than me. But yeah, I saw that, and I wasn't aware that any micro game, home computer games got released on that.
No, I was very surprised.
You know, it's obviously got a reputation. It has to be a very slick game for it to.
But Eurogamer in 2008 gave it 9 out of 10, which is, you know, equivalent 90%.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, I mean, judging it, I think without trying not to. Okay, so judging it, I think from today, I think you judge it. In my opinion, you probably judge it quite harshly. But if you try to judge it from a 1993 perspective, you would judge it a lot higher.
Yeah, yeah. This is a hard one for me, because most of the games that we cover, I played the first time around.
Yeah.
So I can remember how impressed I was at the time, and, you know, I can, with this, where I didn't play it, it's hard. But like I say, I can only imagine that if you play it for the first time, especially back then, and you see what it's pushing the C64, you're going to be impressed.
I don't think the 100% review did it any favours.
No, because it's too high. It's
a joke, almost.
Yeah, you're going to feel let down.
Yeah.
There was games, I think it was Mercenary, which is a great game, and this was this budget release. I'm sure your Sinclair gave it like 97%.
Yeah, it's just become ridiculous.
Mercenary's a great game. I really enjoyed it at the time. And it will still be a great game today, but it was more a 85-90% game.
Which is amazing. 85-90% is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. When you start giving, it's like Mario 64, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, suggesting it's perfect. It's clearly not perfect.
No.
Yeah.
So it's but at the time, it was a big thing, you know, it was a great game. So. Yeah.
But interestingly, Steve Rowlands also says that he didn't think it helped, you know. And although he said they went out and got very drunk when the review landed, I think now I look back on that and I don't necessarily see it as cynical. I see it as it feels a bit desperate, you know. I think when I read these magazines, and I've read some of the later Amiga format magazines in the late 90s, and they're so desperate for good stuff to happen for that platform.
That's how it gets. I remember, you know, some of the PlayStation magazines when the N64 started coming out.
Yeah.
It was constant bickering about
slamming Nintendo. The N64. Yeah. I hate all of that.
And a lot of the time, your readers have both systems.
Yeah, they don't feel so passionate about one, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is sad, especially I think because of the micros, and we know what happened with the 8 and 16-bit computers. I think especially with the Amiga, it feels when you read some of those later reviews, and they're so desperately trying to kind of build up enthusiasm again, and you're thinking that scene is dead and it's gone, and you're so clinging on to it.
Yeah, I was a victim to. There was a beat 'em up game released on the Amiga quite late in its life called Capital Punishment.
Right.
And, you know, I think in your mind, you know that the computer's days are numbered. You know, the PC was really gathering pace, and
PlayStation.
PlayStation, you know, it wasn't even comparing to the 16-bit consoles at the time. The SNES and Mega Drive overtook it. You play the games and they were much slicker. Even in the same game, you know, that the Amiga version would be missing parallax scrolling and it'd come on 8 discs, which was a pain in the arse because you're just swapping discs about. Yeah, you start to realise, but then you read an article or a review in a magazine and you think, oh, yeah, maybe this game could turn things around. But no, it's too late. And the game usually ends up being a big disappointment.
Yeah, that's the impression I got from the Commodore format review. It wasn't necessarily them doing it because they were, you know, ass-kissing.
Least this was a decent game.
Absolutely, yeah.
But frustrating for sure. At the same time, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not perfect.
I enjoyed it. I found in the end it's very playable, and I did enjoy it. And I would have played it for a lot longer had it not been for the Lives book. For sure, I was definitely enjoying it. I was into it. I can't help but think, though, that had they just toned down the difficulty a little bit and just made some of the enemy placements just a little more friendly and less obnoxious, I just think they could have I think it could have been an absolute classic.
You know, they probably should have just made the last level hard, you know, really hard, rather than
giving it a challenge.
Level 3.
Yeah.
Becoming too difficult.
It's only 5 levels though, mate. And although there's 2 stages to every level. I mean,
yeah, that's fair.
It does
enough,
get repetitive as well. You know, when you are just doing the same thing, there is a bit of although, you know, the environments are quite well structured and the enemy types, you know, they do change up as you go through the levels.
It's just left to right, isn't it as well? You know, it doesn't, like I say, you can't go up, the screen doesn't scroll upwards.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of those games that were appearing on the consoles, you could go all over the place.
Yeah. And creatures, of course, it almost feels like a collection of mini games at times, or certainly kind of individual challenges on the various screens. Whereas this does feel like a coherent whole, but I think it probably suffers in the end from a bit of a lack of variety of just generally stuff to do.
Yeah.
Once you know where the secrets are.
Maybe even if it had, like, you know, a puzzle game every couple of levels or something.
Just
something
to
break it
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, let's hit. We're gonna wrap up our chat on Mayhem. Let's hear from Cuthbert32, who will have the last word on Mayhem. Here he is.
Why, hello there. This is Cuthbert32, and... Okay. You got me. It's just mess again. But I really wanted to be part of this episode as well. But Chris wouldn't let me. So I'm here to read Cuthbert's clip for you. So just pretend that I'm Cuthbert32 at the moment, and then enjoy some more mess in your ears, of course. Here we go. Just some reflections from me on June's game, Mayhem in Monsterland. This was the game I had in mind when I put forward the theme of games from late in a system's development. My C64 was a hand-me-down from my sister, who was 7 years older, so the game collection is split into her mid-80s games and my early 90s games. And the difference is vast, as programmers got to grips with squeezing every last bit out of the system. Just compare early Mastertronic games like Milk Race or Street Surfer to late games like Turbocharge or The Lost Ninjas. But by the early 90s, those who could had moved on to the 16-bit consoles or Amiga. And as much as I lusted after an Amiga, it wasn't something my parents could afford, and so I soldiered on with the C64 well into the mid-90s. And while those late games were impressive, there was nothing on the C64 that had the speed or the inertia of those console big names of Mario and Sonic. So when Commodore Format started to serialize the development of Mayhem, it was clearly going to be special. But the C64 rapidly disappeared. You couldn't pick up the games anymore in my local shop in Northern Ireland, and even Commodore Format disappeared from the shelves, so I never even saw the fabled 100% review issue. Roll on 10 years. My C64 has disappeared into my parents' attic, and I've started to play with a C64 emulator on my work laptop, CCS64 from memory. I picked up the Mayhem ROM, had a play, but to be honest, like many this month, thought, meh, what's the fuss? And therein lies the problem with much of retro gaming. You rarely have a manual or bother to look it up, and with infinite other ROMs at your fingertips, if it doesn't grab you immediately, you move on to the next. Which is where gaming back in the day differed. you bought a game with your hard-earned pocket money, and especially if it was a full-price game rather than budget, you played it to the death. You read the manual until it was seared into your brain. Some games you gave up with. I'm looking at you, the human race. But mostly you stuck with and picked up muscle memory that if you pick up the game 30 years later, it's still there. And that's what this month was for me. I stuck with it. I learned the enemy locations, I figured out the quirks of each level, and I progressed through the game. I marveled at the sprites, the backgrounds, the music, and the colors. What amazing colors. Although it's part of the premise of the game, I wonder if, because it starts on sad, people don't give it the chance to see the more colorful, happy levels. That was probably me when I first picked it up 15 years ago on an emulator. So I had a great month, especially playing it on real hardware. I know it wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but the strength of the RA Games Club is the diversity of games, and long may that continue. So that was Cuthbert32. Thanks a lot for your clip, mate.
Well read there by Mads. Well done, and thank you, Cuthbert. Very interesting.
I wasn't expecting that.
No.
I wasn't expecting that at all. I wonder how he managed to do that.
Maybe he's escaped from your clutches.
Well, you saw...
That's if you were holding him. Well, I'm only... You know, what you were saying at the beginning of the episode, it didn't quite add up, Chris.
No one was supposed to know. Now, I am going to have to go and let him out of the blooming cupboard now. Yeah, it was me and you to do this episode, not Mads. He was
you just wanted me to yourself, didn't you?
I did. So I'll go and let him out the cupboard when we're finished. But yeah. before we wrap up, we can't leave without formally announcing the July Game Club game, although I did let the cat out of the bag earlier.
You did?
So we, in for July... As it's become our tradition, we put the control over to the listeners, and it was our listeners' choice. So what we do for those who aren't on Discord, we have and haven't listened to our shortlist episode, we ask our listeners to each nominate one game, and then Mads and I whittle down that long list, and it was a very long list, it was about 25 of them, to four. We chose two each, and they then went to a wider public vote, and... We had a winner.
Mm.
And that winner, with over 50% of the overall vote, we had a very rapid vote this month. There were 79 people who voted. Thank you.
That was in the lead fairly quickly, wasn't it?
Right from the very start. Although I was the first person to vote because I set the poll up and I always vote first. And I chose Rocket Robot on Wheels for the N64.
Which came last.
So I was one of only 8 people who voted for that.
Yeah.
Now, Half-Life's a strong choice.
Yeah. You very a fan? Popular game. Yes. Yeah, I enjoyed Half-Life. Yeah.
It's a great game.
Mm.
Yeah.
I remember waiting for the Dreamcast version, which I don't think was officially released here in the UK.
Don't think it was, no.
There was a version that made it out onto the pirate scene.
Yeah. Well, I think it was finished.
Yeah, I think it was. You're right. And it didn't get the official release, did it? So it just got leaked. Yeah.
The PS2. But no, because it came out on the PS2. And that you know, that's a pretty strong port. And it's actually got some extra content in it as well.
Has it? I didn't realise that. An extra episode. I don't think I ever played it on the PS2.
Yeah. My only reservation with Half-Life is that I've, and this is a very selfish personal point of view, is I have played it quite a few times. And even most recently, only about 3 years ago.
But, yeah, see, I haven't played it since it came out originally.
But what is going to be great about this is we have our walking encyclopedia on Discord, i.e. Roushi, who seems to have played every single game and every single add-on, both official and unofficial, for every single game.
Yeah.
And he's a walking encyclopedia of this stuff, especially on PC gaming. And so he knows all of... He has pretty much mentioned every single mod ever made for Half-Life and has given us a list of those that we should go and play. So he's great. So I am going to go through Half-Life again, but I should be able to nail it pretty quickly. And then I'm going to start playing some of these amazing fan-made mods that sound pretty incredible.
Yeah, I bet they're good.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. We're also looking forward to some multiplayer. I didn't realise that Half-Life is a deathmatch mode, but it does. So
No, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, it does. So we're gonna play some multiplayer. So if you get a chance, mate, on your might be able to get it going on your Mister, mightn't you? Would you? No, it's not 486.
No, I'd probably have to play a console version.
Yeah.
So
that'll probably rule you out of the old multiplayer.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it. So Half-Life is our game for July 2021. And a reminder that in August and September, we will be choosing an RPG. So feel free to lobby us, harangue us, give us your suggestions, tell us what we should be choosing. We've already had a couple people putting their vote forward to what they think. Mads and I do go a little bit self-indulgent. We will be choosing the long list ourselves, but the short list will be going through to the public vote in the usual way. Certainly one that I look forward to. I think we're just about there, mate.
Yes, very enjoyable.
Yeah, thank you.
We were supposed to record this episode yesterday, and Sunday night I didn't get any sleep, and I was like The Walking Dead yesterday. Thank you for letting me change the recording date, because it would have been terrible.
Well, I also didn't sleep very well on Sunday, so I was quite relieved when I sensed that you didn't fancy it. I thought, oh, that's good. No, it's been good, mate, and it's been...
Nice catch-up.
We need to get more Dean Swain into the ears of our listeners on a more regular basis.
I know. I keep promising I'll be on. Again, I always say I'll be on at Christmas, I think. Every episode I record, I say, I'll see you at Christmas.
Well, I don't think you're that infrequent, but I definitely think, you know, well, from a listener myself, you know, I was always, whenever you were on, and I'm not just saying this, but I think it was always like, you know, that's the kind of core Retro Asylum. That's Dean's the OG.
Yeah, well, I've been there from the beginning, so I should be on every episode, really. But, you know, life gets in the way. But, yeah, I still enjoy doing it. It's great when I can get on.
Well, it's been great to have you as part of the Game Club. So
thank you very much for the invite. And I'm sorry, the pop star, you know, just gave you the old... Heave-o.
We've always got people to come in. You know, I'll always jump in on these things. It's absolutely fine. So let's go out with the usual, before you give you a shout-out, usual plugs. So come and find us on Facebook. Just search up The Retro Asylum. Twitter, we are at The Retro Asylum. We're on Discord, which is really where our community is.
And if you go on to retroasylum.com, you'll find a link there to our Discord channel.
Yeah, we've got around 800 members on Discord, I would say.
Very lively place, friendly as well, which is a good thing.
It's very difficult now to keep up with the chat because there's so much of it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's all right if you're on a computer all day long. Yeah. Myself, because I drive for a living, I'm very rarely on there. But when I do get on there, again, you know, the guys are friendly.
Yeah, so good.
It is nice.
Yeah, we've got a really, really great community. I'm just looking at some of the messages. I mean, we've got a great group of guys. As I said, we've got the quiz coming up. Thank you to Blake. Yeah, I think that there's rumours of arcade trips in the autumn. So come and join in with us on Discord. It is where the community very much is. We've got an Instagram account, haven't we, Dean? Why should people come and follow us on Instagram, Dean?
Well, they'll occasionally see me posting pictures of hardware or a game I'm playing. The covers usually get uploaded onto there.
And they are wonderful and well worth checking out on their own.
It's just little bits and pieces. You know, I'm not on there constantly, so don't think you're going to miss out on too much. But, yeah, you'll get to see bits and pieces in the shed.
This is the plug section. This is not where you're supposed to say you're not missing much.
You're missing loads. You're missing the shed. It's great. Me and the spiders live down here,
and we never mention YouTube, but we ought to, because you put in some work on that YouTube channel. So yeah, come and see us on YouTube.
I do want to start uploading some more bits on there, but it's just finding the time.
Join
up, and when we do publish a video, you won't miss it, and hopefully you'll enjoy what you see.
Yeah, for sure. I think, they might not be regular and they might not be many, but I think when the videos do go up, they're really good. They're really good stuff.
Yeah, as long as I don't abuse the audio levels, which I did on the last one.
Mads told you off.
Mads had a go at me,
Mads the audiophile told you off. And then finally, or penultimately, Patreon. So we've got a absolutely stellar list of patrons. We're so humbled.
Yes, and I thank you all.
Yeah, we really do. We do this, as I always say, we do this if we had no patrons. We'd probably do it if we had zero
listeners. Of course we would. But, yeah, it's nice that the costs of running the show are covered. Yeah. And it's thanks to you guys. So we do appreciate it.
And if you want to add your name and listen to Dean and I murder the pronunciation of your name, then you can just go to www.patreon.com and search for The Retro Asylum. And whatever you can give, it's so warmly and gratefully received. So
Does go towards the costs of running the show, because hosting a podcast, when they become popular, can work out quite expensive. Yeah. So
Steve has become a high-rolling pop star on his own steam, not because he's spending all the Patreon money and pretending to be one.
Yeah, yeah.
He genuinely is a pop star. And then finally, we always like, we've got 378 Apple Podcast reviews. Did you know that, Dean?
Is that how many we've got now?
Yeah, 378. That growth has slowed massively, as it would for a show like ours. But we always feature really highly on the in the podcast charts. It would be so nice to see us in the top 10 at some point. So go and get those reviews in if you...
Yeah, because we did, you know, we've been number one a few times, but not for a long time. There's a lot more competition out there these
days. We were 21 last week.
Yeah.
In the Great Britain.
I didn't know that.
Charts.
Yeah. Yeah, so I need to keep track of it more.
Yeah.
So but that's nice, isn't it? Yeah, you know, really out of all the different shows that are out there, and, you know, some of them are really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not as good as us, but they're not bad. So,
well, the original
very good.
Is always the imitation is the finest form of flattery and all that.
But well, no, that's it.
We each love and we always shout out the other content producers and we're they're friends of ours and we're they do some great stuff and I'd like to think that we each bring something different to the table. And we each have our identities. But yeah, get on there. To quote the old Chase HQ advert, if you're listening to The Retro Asylum without leaving an iTunes review, what are you waiting for? Go and do it. Yeah. 5 stars as well, if possible, please.
It all helps us as well, doesn't it? It helps us, you know, be seen by people who haven't discovered The Retro Asylum yet.
Yeah.
It's funny, talking about that, I posted that thing up a little while ago. It was a keyboard. I wanted a mechanical keyboard for my mister. And there was one for sale on Facebook. And I messaged a guy. And sadly, the keyboard had been sold. But he replied back to me saying, I've just discovered your podcast. It's great. Keep up the good work. So
it's amazing.
That was, you know, such a small world.
Yeah.
That's mad. It did make me chuckle.
Yeah, it's like that small little feeling of fame in a very niche, small way. Yeah, so there you go. Go and do all those things. We'd be very grateful. Yeah. Mate, any shout-outs?
Just to the usual, Steve, Matt, Mads, yourself, Alex Crowley, Ali, the Retro Hunter, Andy Goodoy, you know, all of them.
Yeah.
They're all good boys.
Yeah.
All nice people.
Friends of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, yeah. Other guys, Mads is out the cupboard now. Looking forward to recording with you again soon, mate. No doubt it'll come around very quickly. Shout out
hopefully.
Shout out to the playthrough guys. And a thank you, Dean, for all your work that you do. It's not a thankless job because we're always gushing to thank you, but you do it out of the goodness of your heart and we're massively grateful. Playthrough is going really well. Come and see us at playthrough.com if you're into your modern and middle-aged games as well as your retro games. So shout out to Jim and Andy for that.
Hello. Hello, guys.
And other than
you're enjoying doing your other show, are you?
Mate, I love doing this podcasting thing. You know I do.
Yeah.
And I can't get enough of it. And I enjoy modern games as well as retro games. So it's a very different show where we do go deep. Normally, multiple episodes on one game. It's not for everyone, so that's fine. To be honest, it's like a book club for us. That's exactly what it's a book club for games.
Yeah. But it works. It's great.
Well, we enjoy it. You know, and as we always say,
that's the main thing. If you enjoy it, people will come.
Yeah, and we had a very healthy debate on The Last of Us at the last episode. Mads and I normally fall out at some point on these episodes. and lo and behold, we were once again disagreeing. I ended up drinking way too much whiskey by the end of it, so I'm slurring my words by the end of it. And it all got a little bit crazy, but it was a good episode. Cool. If you're interested, playthroughpod.com or search for us Playthrough on your podcast platform of choice. And until next time, Mr. Swain, see you on Saturday for some big box gaming goodness.
Big box games and a bag of arcade buttons I've got for you.
Oh, life does not get any better than that. Take care, mate. See you soon.
You too, mate. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Hello, lads. It's Stu again here. I just really wanted to pop on at end of show and say well done. And maybe if I could just jump in shout outs and do a shout out, just a few shout, well, just the one really, one shout out, just to Don for doing show on his own. Well done, Don. Well, actually, you know, you got a bit of help from Crisp, so thanks to Crisp as well. So well done, lads. All the best. It's a great show. I haven't heard it yet, but I'm assuming it's going to be brill. So thanks very much. All the best.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.